Welcome to the Paleo View. I'm Stacey Toth of PaleoParents.com. You might also know me as the broth lady or the inventor of the hashtag more vegetables than a vegetarian. I'm the co-author of several paleo cookbooks, including Eat Like a Dinosaur, Beyond Bacon, Real Life Paleo. I like to talk about health at any size and self-love and personal acceptance. Specifically, I have a love for lifting heavy things. If you're interested in finding more out about that, you can also find me on Strong Woman Radio.
And I'm Dr. Sarah Valentine of thepaleomom.com. I'm the New York Times best-selling author of The Paleo Approach and The Paleo Approach Cookbook. I'm passionate about nutrient density and the intersection of diet and lifestyle with health, which really means I just love talking about science.
News and Views, where Sarah and I catch up and you get to listen to our gossip.
Hello.
My gosh, the show is hilarious before it's even started. So earlier, I was texting you, as we usually do before a show. And
are we really recording? Can we put it off one more day?
Yeah, I mean, please? That's usually how it goes. One of us is like,
I don't want to. I'm tired. I think that's typically what happens.
It's the weekend. And I said in one text message, what's the show topic? Are we recording? You wrote back, constipation. And my interpretation of that exchange was that you were not ready to yet start recording because you were going potty. And so
that
I was like,
was actually really, really not the case.
Right. And so I was like, do you want to reschedule? Thinking.
I'm like, I'm fine. Yeah. I can go now. Like, I could handle an early bedtime if you want to move it, but like, I'm ready. We're good.
And Matt's like,
and then you're like, but what's the topic? I'm not like, no, constipation.
So before that exchange though, cause Matt usually preps Skype for me before I come down to make sure that everything's going to record and everything. And he's like, she's online. And I'm like, well, I'm telling you, she's pooping. And he's like, oh. So then you were like, you know, the show is pooping, not me, Stacey. Get on the podcast. I was like, oh my gosh.
So, because we only have talked about this for like the last 4 podcasts, that we've got a show coming up that's going to make you feel really, really awkward.
Yeah, I feel like...
I like talking about poop.
I know. I feel like we broke through the awkward a little bit for me by making it be funny to start.
I was, like, surprised that you forgot that it was the poop show.
I think that's intentional, though. I think my brain is just, like, shutting down.
What's the topic? I'm like, we've been planning this for weeks. What do you... You've been putting it off for weeks is actually really far more accurately stated.
I don't believe that you can blame me for the fact that this show got moved. I'm 100% positive that was your idea to have the last 3 shows that we had.
So... I tried to push for doing this show when we did our first sugar show.
Oh.
And you were like, no sugar. No. No sugar. We got lots of good sugar questions. Let's talk about sugar. Sugar, sugar, sugar. And I was like, sure, you sure? Constipation's really cool. We got lots of great questions.
Oh, really, yeah. It's really cool. Everybody's doing it.
No. Constipation itself sucks. But there's a lot of questions about it. And it's a really important topic to talk about because it's something that goes along as a side effect of a lot of health conditions. It's also something that when people have this sort of like adjusting digestive tract, when they start paleo, it's a really common side effect. And it's also, I think, like a common complaint that doesn't necessarily go away with paleo. And so there's like a lot of different sort of ways that people sort of come at this as being a problem. And because it's like a relatively common thing to suffer from, like it's a worthwhile topic to tackle. And poop is like such an important part of everybody's day, and we never talk about it.
Everybody poops. Also, I mean, if you're constipated, it might prevent you from recording a podcast.
It could, and you wouldn't want that to happen.
You don't want life to get in the way. Okay.
So other than poop.
Here's the thing is, you know, I don't like talking about bodily functions. In fact, I believe that I like privacy.
You are the queen of euphemisms when it comes to bodily functions.
I don't know what's wrong with me. It's so weird because...
You talk about breastfeeding.
I have no problem talking about breastfeeding. And when it comes to parenting my children, I'm a firm believer in, like, properly calling things what they are and being really honest and open. And, like, if I had this conversation with my kids, it would be totally fine. And also, I will be the first one to tell you all the details about my own digestion. But for some reason, when we start talking about, like, straight up, let's just call it what it is, I get, like, blushing and giggling and weird. So I'm just going to apologize in advance for that behavior.
Would it help you to pretend that I was one of your children?
No. And nor would, you know, I'm going to forget the, you know, 8 listeners that we have either. Knowing that it's not actually 8 listeners.
No, it hasn't been for a while.
No, maybe just a couple of weeks. So let's do this thing. What's happening? Should we just jump in?
Just jumping in? You just, like, want to rip off the Band-Aid.
You told me.
You don't want to talk about anything personal. We're just skip over news and views and just jump into...
I feel like we had a little funny story there. That's about all I can offer. I feel like...
That's all you have? All
right. Yep.
All right, then. I would feel really silly sharing anything about my life after you so blatantly not sharing anything. Turned in a book on Tuesday.
That's super exciting.
Sure.
I mean, I had a birthday. I did a bunch of stuff, but it just feels really weird to be like,
I had a birthday.
I did some
celebrated
stuff.
It.
My kids went to school, but
it started school.
You know, it's
just, you know, it was not an eventful week. We got to talk about poop, and we can't have anything else in our lives associated with poop.
No, exactly. That is 100% how I'm feeling. I'm like, I do not want to associate my birthday with poop. So let's just move right along.
So let's get moving.
Oh my God, you're going to kill me. I'm literally going to die before this podcast is over.
Oh, how red are you right now? We need a scale. We need a scale.
I can't. I just can't even.
There's going to be, I think we should have like selfies every 10 minutes.
Oh my God.
And then we'll just put them together like in a little collage. You can see Stacey get gradually redder and redder and redder. It's going to be awesome. It's going to be epic. Epic.
I just took a selfie. And I am legit red. Like, not just a little bit. I am like actually full on facial blushing.
People can't hear it. I'm like clapping my hands because I'm like so excited.
Okay,
I'm
can like, can we just get this over with?
Yes. Let's
you so
wanna just like jump
it?
Into some science then.
Yeah. But I mean, oh goodness. Okay. Okay, I'm ready.
You sure?
No.
I'm going to talk about poop in the Science with Sarah segment.
I'm going to handle it. I'm going to be a grown up.
You can do this. I believe in you.
Next segment is Science with Sarah, where I take a moment to explain the details and the whys.
So because we're talking about constipation, one of the things that I wanted to talk about was transit time and what that is and what factors affect it. Because when you start to understand all of the many inputs that go into how our digestive tracts really regulate the speed with which things move through it, it starts to become a lot easier to really hone in on what might be going on in our individual bodies that might be slowing things down. So what would be normal transit time would be somewhere between 12 hours and 48 hours. So when a medical practitioner does an official transit time test, you consume like gelatin mixed with like really potent food dye. And what they're looking for, like a normal result, would be starting to see that food dye at the 12 to 14 hour mark. And you're no longer seeing that food dye anymore at the 36 to 48 hour mark. And so really something that is sort of like a, you know, a good speed with which food to move through to the gastrointestinal tract is in the middle of that, right? Like 18 to 24 hours is sort of like right smack in the middle. And if it's taking much longer than that, that's starting to cause problems, right? It's pointing to some deficiencies in digestion. So things that impact that speed. So what is controlling that is a variety of hormones, neurotransmitters, the type of bacteria growing in the digestive tract, and then the muscle contraction. It's called peristalsis, which is slowly pushing things through the gigantic tube that is our gastrointestinal tract. So for neurotransmitters, the two chief neurotransmitters that are actually regulating digestion are serotonin and melatonin. And they seem to have like a push and pull type action. So they both can contract and they both can relax the muscles of the gastrointestinal tract. And then they tend to work sort of opposite to each other in order to coordinate that, you know, movement of materials down the small intestine. And actually, it's one of those interesting things because people recognize serotonin as, you know, the neurotransmitter that's been implicated in depression, although whether or not we're actually deficient in depression is something that still has never been proven. And people recognize melatonin as being a circadian rhythm hormone, the hormone that prepares our bodies for sleep, the hormone that we might take as a sleep aid. And it's actually really interesting that the vast majority of the serotonin and melatonin in our bodies is not in our brains. It's in our gastrointestinal tract. And it's actually probably one of the reasons why we tend to feel sleepy after a big meal is because of the extra serotonin and melatonin that's needed to digest a big meal. And there's a huge range of hormones that have roles in regulating digestion. And also many of these hormones that regulate various aspects of digestion also send signals to the brain to tell the brain that we've eaten. And so they're also satiety signals. And there's a few that are really important in terms of regulating transit time. So cholecystokinin, peptide YY, gastrin, secretin, motilin, like they all have kind of pretty cool names. They all work in concert. And what's really interesting is that they are very sensitive to the type of food we eat. So we know, for example, that some of these hormones will increase faster after a high protein meal. Some of them will increase higher after you eat starches and sugars, and some of them will increase in response to fats, and some of them will increase in response to fibers. And most of them, you know, increase to various amounts, like to all of those things, but it'll be like especially to protein and then middle to fiber and a little bit to fat and starch, right? So each one has its own sort of profile that of the types of foods that we're eating that stimulate it. And it's one of the reasons why balanced meals are so important for regulating digestion, because when you eat some protein, some starch, some fiber, some fat with your meals, that's when you sort of get this like perfect concert of digestion regulation hormones going. And that is really, really important for regulating all of the different actions that are digestion, including motility and thus gastrointestinal transit. The bacteria that live in our gut are also a huge source of chemical mediators that are controlling things like digestion. I mean, the bacteria in our gut also control our immune system. They produce cytokines, which can even trigger remote inflammation. Some of the cytokines they produce can control how leaky the blood-brain barrier is. I mean, these things are amazing. They make neurotransmitters, right? They're directly controlling our brain chemistry. And so bacteria have a variety of roles in controlling transit time. One is simply in secreting all of these chemicals that are helping to regulate motility. Another one is in the sort of almost dysfunctional state. So let's take a step backwards. stool is about 80% made up of dead bacteria from our gastrointestinal tracts and bacteria that are going through the normal life cycle. And so what happens when you have too many or they're in the wrong part, you start to build that bulk. Either you're building that bulk too soon, too far up the gastrointestinal tract, which can cause constipation and blockages, or you're building up that bulk in an exaggerated way. And that can cause a lot of problems. And of course, bacteria are really sensitive to our diets. So if we're eating a lot of refined sugars, a lot of inflammatory fats, if we're not eating fiber, if we're not getting omega-3 fatty acids, those things directly impact the gastrointestinal tract bacteria in a very negative way. So things like SIBO, of course, can cause problems here. But any kind of gut dysbiosis, so just not feeding the right types of bacteria by not eating a diet that contains good fats and is rich in a diversity of different fiber types. Because fiber is a regulator in itself. So fiber directly feeds these bacteria, which have this regulating action. It directly influences the hormones, which has a regulatory action. But we know that just the mechanics of having fiber in the digestive tract is a major stimulus to gastrointestinal motility. And we know that soluble fiber and insoluble fiber kind of work in different ways in this regard. So having sufficient fiber, and we know that soluble fiber will kind of tend to slow things down and insoluble fiber will tend to speed things up. So having sufficient fiber and sort of both types of fiber in our diets is really, really important. But then it also becomes important to have the right fluid intake. So when there's a lot of soluble fiber that that is soluble in liquid, right, so it absorbs water, having higher fluid intake becomes a really important part of this chemistry and really, really important part of this equation. Not to mention that being properly hydrated has a tremendous amount of other sort of chemical signal type effects in the body, and it can control things like ion channels and ion status. And that comes to another really important regulator of digestion, which is having mineral sufficiency. So it's a muscle contracting. So the same type of minerals that we think of as being important for skeletal muscle contractions, magnesium, potassium, calcium, phosphorus, those become really important for the functioning of the gastrointestinal tract. And then because there is such an important interplay of hormones that are at work here, it means that the motility of the gastrointestinal tract are really sensitive to sort of gut-brain axis things. So psychological stress has a direct effect. And the type of stress and exactly how your body is chemically responding to stress can cause either the extreme, either shutting down motility and turning everything off or turning it onto light speed mode. And clearly that has two different symptoms that are associated with it. Activity, normal amounts of activity, you know, having just an active lifestyle where you're moving all day, you know, the occasional bout of something more intense has a tremendous regulatory action on the gastrointestinal tract. And super intense activity, of course, then takes it to the other extreme where it tends to speed everything up, which is why diarrhea is a side effect of a lot of endurance training. It's something that a lot of endurance trainers or a fairly large percentage of them end up dealing with. And then sleep, of course, affects neurotransmitters and hormones and, you know, the immune system and a bunch of other things that are feeding into this. And so sleep is a really important regulator of digestive motility as well. And then when it comes to digestion, how the other organs that are related to how we digest foods are working are also important signals. So if the stomach is not producing adequate stomach acid, that means that the pancreas and the gallbladder aren't getting the right signals. If the pancreas isn't working well, or if the liver's not producing enough bile, or if the gallbladder has stones in it or is inflamed and isn't storing as much bile, that's going to affect digestion. If you're not chewing your food appropriately, so you're not mixing it with enough salivary amylase in your saliva, all of those things are affecting the how well things are getting broken down in your digestive tract, and then that is impacting how well things are moving. And so all of these things come together. And there's a few sort of key things that I think are important to think about for people who are battling constipation. One is the gut microbiome and the role that those bacteria are playing. And are we feeding our little bacteria pets the right foods that they need to be healthy, which is the diversity of fibers, especially focus on insoluble fiber, omega-3 fats, and a low stress environment, a low refined sugar environment. I mean, those things are really important for our gut bacteria. Then the next thing is neurotransmitters. And you can actually do a neurotransmitter test. It's a urine test. A functional medicine specialist will be able to recommend it. And you can have your levels of serotonin and dopamine and melatonin all measured. And that can be a really interesting look at a lot of things, because that affects so many different systems in the body when neurotransmitters are off. But that is something that goes along with chronic stress, something that goes along with nutrient deficiencies, something goes along with inadequate sleep. It's something that goes along with addictive behaviors. There's a chicken and egg thing happening there. And so those are some of the major things to think about. And then there's a variety of health conditions where motility is affected. So I think the classic example is Hashimoto's thyroiditis. And constipation is a pretty common symptom of having hypothyroidism, whether it's Hashimoto's or a different thyroid pathology. And so understanding that it could be something simple like drinking more liquid, eating more fiber to address gut bacteria issues, taking a magnesium supplement to make sure your magnesium is sufficient. It could be as simple as something like that, but it could be a lot more complicated. So constipation is always something that needs to be discussed with a healthcare professional. There's a lot of causes of constipation that are pretty benign and easy to fix, but there are a few things that really require a medical professional's ability to dig deeper. So it's definitely something to always discuss with a medical professional. They may recommend you try something easy, like laxatives, but don't take laxatives. They might recommend something easy like that to start with. And if they do, a magnesium supplement, a squatty potty, or a step and go. So these are stools that you put under your feet to raise your feet up when you're sitting on the toilet, and it changes the alignment of your rectum so that you're not pooping around an internal corner is basically what it does. And that by itself can be phenomenal for dealing with constipation. It really takes, when things are just borderline, basically internally, if you have to push around a corner, that basically can just tip the scale over to constipation. If you're have that alignment, even if things aren't ideal in terms of digestion or these other things, you're not then dealing with constipation. And the problem with constipation is when it's caused by something external, or something sort of external to the digestive tract, so something like hypothyroidism, the problem happens is that then that constipation allows for dysfunctional gut microbiome to develop. So when your gut doesn't have the motility that it needs because of something like low thyroid hormones, you are now creating sort of like a stagnant environment, and that causes death of good bacteria and growth of bad bacteria, sometimes pathogenic bacteria, small intestinal bacterial overgrowth. Like, those are all things that can happen secondary to motility issues from some other pathology. So understanding all of the different pieces at work here, it's not as simple as it's not a simple system. And so it's something that understanding how many different inputs there are is really important to being able to figure out, why someone might be suffering constipation or other, gastrointestinal distress type symptoms, and help to tease out exactly what's going on, because it's definitely something that needs to be addressed. And just to define constipation for people, because I think that's something that can be really, really challenging. The definition basically is for a bowel movement every 48 hours. If the bowel movement is not a good form on the Bristol stool form scale, would classify as constipation. If at 48 hours, the form of the stool is still good, then that would be considered normal. And then it sort of gets pushed to 72 hours. So if it's every 72 hours, that's constipation, no matter what your stools look like when you go. If it's 48 hours, it's constipation if your stools are firm, if they have kind of little wrinkles in them, if you can, if you have to strain at all to push them out, if they're unusually thick. So, Stacey, you got to take another selfie right now.
I am in complete denial. No, so honestly, this part for some reason I don't have a problem with, because I think I have described types of poop for so long because of the digestive problems that I had around my gallbladder and all that kind of stuff. So, yeah, I don't know why some things weird me out and some don't. But
so there's a so if people want to Google Bristol stool form scale, basically stool should be a type 4 on the Bristol stool form scale. It's also in the
multiple approach.
You know, so here's the thing. There's types 1 through 7. 1 is hard little pellets. 2 is hard little pellets glued together in a giant sausage thing. 3 is sausage thing with cracks, so the pellets are kind of fused a bit. 4 is more like a snake with and smooth and soft. 5 is blobs. 6 is fluffy, mushy pieces. And 7 is watery with no pieces. So it goes from like severe constipation to severe diarrhea. And so a doctor will say that anything between 3 and 5 is normal, but it's kind of like, it's normal. It means common, right? It's kind of like, it's that situation, right? We have a lot of issues where we sort of have lab ranges, for example, that aren't actually representing what would be ideal for that marker, but they're representing, you know, what 50% of the population actually has. So what an ideal poop should look like is type 4. So that is the long, smooth, soft snake.
I would say it would be unreasonable to expect that your poop would never change in appearance based on the different kinds of foods that you
certainly
eat.
That's true. And so certainly it's basically type 4 most of the time.
Right. So just like, you know, we say there's a paleo ideal and Sarah and I are both like, well, we're not perfectionists all the time. It's the same thing with poop. Like you have this ideal that you're working for and it can be a really good tool to use to see if you're on track or not. At least that's how I use it. Like I know if I'm eating a lot of dairy, my stool changes and I become aware of that. And also if I don't have the right ratio to like carbohydrate and fiber to fat, then my stool also changes in the opposite direction. And I'm referring to like the 1 scale and the 7 scale here. So, I think it's a good indicator of your own kind of N=1 experimentation on what your body needs to be aware of those things. But please, for the love of everything that you do in life, never, ever take a photo of what is in your toilet and send it to anyone asking if it's normal. Never, ever, ever take that photo and post it on social media. In fact, I would just recommend that you avoid taking.
Have you seen someone?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I have. I have been tagged in people's stool photos.
What?
Yeah. This is not something that happens to you?
No one has ever tagged me in a stool photo, and I feel so lucky right now. Please, please, can we just keep this no one has ever tagged Sarah in a stool photo streak going indefinitely? Please. because I am not qualified to evaluate the quality of your stool.
So I will say, I heard you give a medical recommendation earlier in your scientific briefing, which you probably didn't mean to do. I just want to remind people that nor Sarah nor I are medical professionals. We cannot give you medical professional advice. If you have a medical professional in your life giving you recommendations, we encourage you to either do investigation on your own or seek a second opinion if it's something that's inconsistent with what you believe might be the best recommendation for you.
Yeah, laxatives. So let me expound on laxatives slightly. If you are in a severely constipated, impacted bowel mode, clearing that out is absolutely top priority. But laxatives are gut irritants. You know, by definition, that's how they work. And so if you're dealing with the more mild chronic type constipation, there's a lot of things to try before having to resort to laxatives. So something like a stool softener, like just taking magnesium in a non very absorbable form, something like that, looking at neurotransmitter analysis, looking at diet changes and playing with the type of fiber that you're eating, increasing fluid intake, decreasing stress, increasing activity, getting more sleep. I mean, those are all sort of like the low-hanging fruit when it comes to addressing constipation, getting a squatty potty or a step and go. And so there's a lot of things to try that clearly, you know, you're going to want to have very constant communication with your doctor, because when it gets to that impacted, you know, stage or even before that, you don't want to be dealing with that, because that can cause a lot more damage than any kind of laxative would cause. So that is a definitely individual situation, talk with a healthcare professional. But I think it's important for people to understand that laxatives, just because you can buy them in the pharmacy on the shelf, are not a benign drug. Like, I think that's some important information to give.
And they can also really be easily abused. Like, from my understanding, and it's not something I ever... Let's just say, as someone with a history of eating disorders, I never use laxatives properly. But I'm pretty sure that there's a warning on the box that says, you know, if you're using this for more than X amount of days in a row, that you should seek medical professional help. Like, those laxatives.
I was prescribed laxatives for 12 years. It was one of the medications that I was on prior to paleo that I went off really quickly after adopting a paleo diet. And I also had an eating disorder, right? I had binge eating disorder. I was obese, and I never purged. But what I did was take too many of my prescription laxatives. And so that is part of my sort of mental disorder with regards to food history. And that can cause permanent damage, right? It can damage the nerves that send signals to your gastrointestinal tract. And it was something I was warned about at the time, that we don't want to have to do this for too long, because then you could end up with you can end up basically bowel incontinent, which sounds terrible. So it's definitely not something to play around with, and not something to abuse. And speaking from personal experience, it's not cool.
Yeah, that was totally my point, which is that it is not intended to be, you know, long term, and if so, should be or would be at the discretion of a medical professional. But we're hoping that we can give you some alternatives here that are even more helpful to the need than the medication itself. So, that said,
I was totally not planning on sharing that, but it kind of then felt like I had to.
Yeah, I just was like, I didn't know how to describe what I was getting at without actually saying it. So there we are again with all kind of veiled euphemisms about me and my history and us and our.
Are you saying that you used to do that as well?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure.
So another way that our health histories are aligned.
Totally aligned.
Yeah. In a terrible, terrible way.
Well, and the thing is I think that we represent a more common constituent of at least
America. Can I tell you where I got the idea to do it?
Middle school? What? An
episode of Degrassi Junior High.
Oh, see?
About eating disorders.
Yeah. Good job, social media, teaching us what to do. No, I had a friend in junior high who I was bulimic with, and we were like, we got to make sure if we didn't, you know, get it all out one way that we're getting it out another. So
I had a bulimia friend?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we were. That's how I learned how to be bulimic.
Wow.
This is totally going down a different path, but
really, yeah, this is getting serious really fast.
So something I understand about constipation, and correct me if I'm wrong, is that it can be really kind of just as much as you can have chronic constipation. If you have what I would call kind of a roller coaster of digestion, like if you're feeling like you don't go several days and you're starting to get crampy and constipated, and then, you know, you have another cycle of very loose stools that seem to be uncontrollable. And I will get really uncomfortable and go out on a limb here. And instead of saying vague things like uncomfortable, when you have normal stools, that means that you should be able to kind of stand around and say to yourself, you know, I really need to use the restroom in the near future. And if you don't find one in like 10 minutes to maybe even, like, sometimes I can be aware of these things for like 45 minutes. It's not like a situation, you know, like a literal accident happening in your pants. I say if you're having incidents,
if you go from awareness to I must run to the toilet right now,
right, like in the next minute or else, you know,
that's not cool.
I had no idea that wasn't cool because that's how I lived my life. So I just want to be really clear to people that this idea of like needing to go to the bathroom, it should kind of just like pooping. It should be kind of like urination. Like, you know, you don't just automatically be like, oh my God, I have to pee my pants. Like there's a period where it kind of builds up and you're like, oh yeah, I need to go to the bathroom. And then eventually it gets to that point. But like, it, you know, hopefully you're catching it before that.
Well, and I used to have the issue of holding it because of whatever, I don't know, random thing, not wanting to poop in a public restroom, for example. And then I would call it missing my chance.
Mm.
And that psychological aspect of it would then like, well, then I'm holding on to it. So then you're getting more liquid absorbed out in the large intestine. So it's firming everything up. And so then it's making it harder to pass. And that can be constipating in itself. So there's sort of two sides to that coin is you should be able to have some time, but like, listen, like ignoring body saying poop time. It's also not cool. There's a right. There's a lot of not cool stuff when it comes to poop. Let's face it.
So my point is that where I was getting with is when you say something like constipation, I just want to confirm for myself and for everyone. My understanding is there's multiple types of constipation, mm-hmm. and just because
there's even a type of diarrhea that's actually constipation. So there's a type of diarrhea that's called, I think it's called breakthrough diarrhea. I might have the terminology wrong, but it's basically there's something, you're constipated and it's wedged, but you have really liquidy stuff sort of seeping around the outside. And so there's even there's a type of constipation.
Really
where people
uncomfortable
think,
when you said that.
Sorry. It was too graphic. We should have had a warning at the top of this show. I think we should record a warning after we're done and have Matt edit it and put it at the beginning and be like, this might not be the best one to listen in the car, in carpool lane in the morning for drop off.
Warning. Just, like, poop discussion might get graphic.
Maybe not. What you want to be cooking your dinner to. Just throwing that out there.
So I think you've answered the question, but I just want to be really clear. When you say constipation, I don't want someone to be in denial that it's something that's not happening to them because they go poop more than once a week, which is, I know that there are people out there that tell themselves that.
It should be, you should be going poop every day.
Right. And I would say even if you're only going poop once a day, like, I just think you're eating more than that.
So Jeff Leach, my hero of Human Gut Project, Human Food Project, what he says, because I believe he is the master of all things poop, is that you should go 2 or 3 times a day, and one of them should be a doozy. Those are his words. Oh, I am quoting Dr. Jeff Leach.
Oh, where do these people get the cojones? Okay.
He takes his own stool samples every day and freezes them. It ruined his marriage.
That's too much. Okay, I don't want to know.
We have him on the show someday.
I'm moving on. I think that you've clarified what my point was, and I hope that when you're considering your digestive health, that you're aware of the variety of things like the 7-point scale, and also I would wholeheartedly agree with this insane person who says that there should be multiples, and I notice that I'm feeling my best, and I notice that like when I'm eating my best, when I'm eating a lot of vegetables, and when I'm eating like healthy foods, that's what my digestion looks like. So I would agree with that, and I think that's helpful for people to frame, like when we define I just wanted to define it for people, because I believe that there is a misnomer, specifically in America, because so many people have digestive problems and aren't aware of them, that just because something is common doesn't mean that it's normal or right. And I think that, like, digestive problems are very common.
I think especially in women, because female hormones do affect motility. And so it is fairly normal to see differences in how your digestive tract is operating with hormone fluctuations. So, you know, around ovulation, towards the end of your cycle, right? During menstruation, all of those sort of, those are when progesterone and estrogen are changing the most. And so that's fairly normal. But I can remember, you know, being in a room of women who are all talking about how every single one of them was constipated. And at the time, being like, oh, good, I'm not the only one. You know, meanwhile, it was probably my dominant earliest symptom of Hashimoto's thyroiditis. And if I had been more sort of more assertive with my doctor, I may have been able to get a diagnosis, you know, 15 years earlier, which would have been nice. So, yes, just because we know a lot of people who have the same thing does not make it good or normal.
We got some questions?
We do.
Questions and Answers, where we answer questions submitted by you through the contact form on our websites, paleomom.com and paleoparents.com.
Help me, Obi-Wan Kenobi. You're my only hope.
So Philippa says, I love your podcast and every Friday eagerly await the new one.
This week, when now she's horrified.
No, she's going to be extra excited because we're going to answer her question. Mm. I have just started the autoimmune protocol. I'm now 2 weeks and 1 day in. After changing from a primal diet with far too much chocolate and ice cream, maybe 3 to 4 times a week. While I've seen improvement in some of my symptoms already, my bowel movements have changed from every day to 2 or 3 times a week. I have no clue why this has happened or what I should do to change it. I drink kombucha every day, stay well hydrated, eat fermented foods once a week, and make sure I eat 10 or more servings of vegetables, raw and cooked, a day, usually non-starchy because I don't like sweet potato. Unfortunately, my illness does not allow me to exercise at all. Do you know why this has happened or what I can do to help get things more regular? I would really like to not have to take medication. I'm sorry for asking about such an indelicate topic, but if you can't ask these questions anonymously on the internet, then where can you ask them? Thank you in advance for your response and keep up the amazing and inspiring work you both do.
Can I ask a completely non-poop related question to you, Sarah?
Sure.
What kind of illness would prevent someone from doing like walking or yoga, like, or swimming, something that would create movement but without a lot of stress in the body?
So there's quite a few autoimmune diseases that are joint diseases that really affect mobility. There's quite a few autoimmune disease. I mean, that can be debilitating and put you in a wheelchair. They can make you bedridden. There's quite a few diseases that affect, right, balance and coordination. So, things that affect joints and things that affect bone, things that affect the central nervous system. So there's multiple that could do that. That's not really, unfortunately, that is not something that is uncommon enough, unfortunately.
Okay. So I will say if yes, I wasn't thinking and was aware of things like, you know, if you're in a wheelchair from MS, obviously. But if you have an autoimmune disease where exertion is a problem, or, you know, a significant amount of effort is a problem, but you can still actually be mobile in some capacity, I would definitely recommend, you know, slow walking, swimming and yoga to really create healthy hormone balance and also to help get things moving a bit if possible. I know, Sarah, you already touched a lot on a lot of these things in Science with Sarah, but the other one that is really helpful for me is hydration. So not just water, but there are a lot of different types of, you know, hydration that can be consumed. And bone broth is something that is always really great for me, as is vegetables. I don't know how you're going to feel about also mentioning the idea that depending on which way your digestion is going, I find that spinach or kale in smoothies that are made with, like, you know, banana, ice, if you do like a frozen banana, it helps with like creaminess and stuff like that. You can also put in, you know, almond milk, or if you can't do almonds, coconut milk, avocado. You can do like a variety of different things. But that might be an extra way to get in even more like fiber and vegetables, which for me, getting enough vegetables is really key to good digestion. But you are the queen of constipation, which I'm not sure is a title you're really wanting to wear. Mm. But I can be an expert in the opposite direction in terms of, like, I am very familiar with IBS and loose stools, but not so much unless I eat a lot of cheese do I have this problem. So I'll let you have at it.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think the short answer is I don't know. The longer answer is some of the questions that I'd be asking. So Philippa went from a primal diet, including chocolate and ice cream. And the thing about dairy is it increases mucus production in the gastrointestinal tract. And in, some people that can actually help, increase motility. And then basically if the mucus gets too much, then that decreases motility, which is why things like cheese can be constipating. And there's nothing really in the autoimmune protocol that that directly increases mucus production in that way. So other things that would do that would be like something like aloe, which would be an AIP-friendly food to try, slippery elm, marshmallow root, which you can get both of those as a supplement or as tea. They are mild immune modulators. So I would definitely be on the lookout for what's happening to symptoms and do that under medical supervision. Those are things that I feel would sort of replicate the mucus effect that cheese and dairy would have. And basically it would be short term, because what should happen is the gastrointestinal tract should figure out how to increase mucus production on its own. So there's sort of like this signal to make mucus, then the signal's gone. So then the gastrointestinal tract undermakes mucus, and then it should gradually come back up. Another thing that may help, you know, normally non-starchy vegetables are what we think of as being the sources of insoluble fiber and help with regulating digestion. But sometimes when it comes to sort of gut microbiome aspects, adding in a little bit of starchy, so it doesn't have to be sweet potato. It could be something like green plantain or yucca, or I just tried boniato root for the first time. It's delicious. Malanga root, taro root, something like Jerusalem artichokes, even like a green banana, like in Stacy's smoothie. So adding a little bit of that can really help with that sort of fiber balance. And then I would look at stress and sleep. I mean, that's one of the unfortunate things for a lot of people, is that initial change in diet can be a psychological stressor. So it could be the fact that eating these different foods is just hard, and we're trying to figure out what to eat, and we're trying to figure out what to cook, and we're feeling sad that we're not eating chocolate, and those psychological stressors are impacting. So I think there's a lot of different things that could be going on. I don't think it would be good to let this go on for too long without an intervention. I think that the easiest intervention to try is a magnesium supplement, like I already mentioned. And again, though, check with your doctor.
Yeah.
So our next question is from a person whose name I'm not sure that I can pronounce. So I'm going to do my best and apologize in advance for not pronouncing it correctly. So Misa, is that how you would say it? How would you say that?
I'm going to let you be the sole offender in this situation.
That's why you make me read the questions. Misa says, what food would be good for me to add back in for constipation? It's been 7 weeks and it's not getting better for me. I already struggled with this, but it has gotten worse. I've been gluten-free for a few years and only ate maybe 1 or 2 grains a day. The only thing I can think that I cut out that might have been a fiber food was organic oatmeal with a bit of flaxseed. I did this about 5 days a week. I'm already eating a lot of veggies and some fruit, so not sure I can add more of that. Thanks so much. Love your books. You are my diet Bible. They are my diet Bible. Not me. I'm not a Bible. The books are.
So she's looking for added fruits and veggies?
Well, so she's been having issues with constipation since going paleo. And she's wondering, like, if it's, like, cutting out. She used to eat oatmeal with a bit of flaxseed, and she doesn't do that anymore. So she's kind of like, what am I not eating that would help regulate, I think, is the heart of the question.
So I think, I mean, I want to make sure that we're not being repetitive, but I do think that a lot of this information, at least from my perspective, is similar, and a lot of what we're saying has to do with, in my experience, different kinds of carbohydrates and fibers that you would be getting from the grains. And the great news is these paleo foods aren't, you know, needing to be enriched with, you know, vitamins and minerals, because they're naturally going to have them and they're going to be synergistic and actually able to be more absorbed. So I don't find that I need to have nearly as much, you know, carbohydrate and fiber as I used to have, but I do know that when I do eat them, that it's very helpful. So you went through a lot of starchy things, and I will say, like, I find that fiber is really important. It's one of the reasons that Sarah and I recommend, like, not just only getting your vegetables from green juices where you're removing the fibers. You know, if you're going to add spinach to your eggs, Sarah blends the spinach right in, not uses the juice of it. And when I add veggies to my morning protein smoothies, I blend it in, not just, you know, the juice of it. And it's because that fiber is what really is helpful for me for a number of reasons, not just, you know, for the sake of digestion, but also satiety and nutrient absorption and all that kind of stuff. So I would say, from my own recommendation, that, you know, I live a very happy life without oatmeal. I admit that sometimes I, like, smell maple oatmeal in the office and wish I could have it, but that is purely from, like, a food reward system and not because of any sort of digestive thing that's needed. So, you know, I just try to focus on eating vegetables at every meal. And I would recommend listening back to, we had, like, a veggie show, right? Is that what it was called? For a lot of different ideas on how Sarah and I actually eat a lot of vegetables in our foods. But that transition to figuring out what really works for your body is important, because what works for me is different than what works for Sarah, and what works for you might be different, but finding that balance of fats to carbs, inclusive of fiber and protein, for each individual person is actually not needing to measure or anything like that. But, you know, there are, I can't eat a ketogenic 100% fat diet. Like, I can't do it. My digestion wouldn't support it. So maybe that works for some people, but I know being aware of those kinds of things in yourself and watching them can be helpful, at least my own N=1 experiments.
So
I'm so awkward with this show. I just really feel like you could have done it by yourself.
No, I couldn't. No, it wouldn't have been good. Everyone's going, no, Stacy, you need to be here. Stacy. That's what everybody's saying right now. So what gets triggered in my brain when someone says that they used to eat oatmeal frequently, and then when they stopped eating oatmeal, they had constipation with soluble fiber? So oatmeal is exceptionally high in soluble fiber, like unlike any other grain. And soluble fiber, so I already sort of mentioned that soluble fiber kind of absorbs water. Typically that slows down motility, but it does something that can help with constipation, and that is to add bulk to stool, which is also why adding some starchy vegetables for Philippa could potentially help. And what it does is it adds bulk, which actually makes it can make stool easier to pass. And so both oatmeal and flaxseed are really high in soluble fiber. So my recommendation would be to look for paleo sources of insoluble fiber, like apples or like sweet potatoes, you know, other starchy vegetables, and incorporating those. So especially if somebody's, you know, eating a lot of veggies and, you know, they're saying some fruit, I mean, that's sort of the classic paleo focus on non-starchy vegetables and, you know, berries and, you know, keeping fruit to a bare minimum. You know, looking at the apple family, pears, but an apple has about the same amount of soluble fiber as a bowl of oatmeal. So, you know, apples and some starchy vegetables.
Knowledge bomb.
Yeah, it's just those like stupid facts that stick in my brain. If they made a Trivial Pursuit version of like food facts, I would be awesome.
I would pay money to see you and Chris Kresser go up Family Feud style on like food facts.
That would be so intimidating. No, that wouldn't happen. I'm not good with confrontation, even in board games. Well, except with my husband, then it's like totally a different thing. I think that was me being done answering the question. In addition to everything else that we've talked about, those are the things that I think could potentially help.
Cool.
So do you have any last poopy thoughts?
I really like the stool. The stool. Look at me. I came up with the poop
stool
joke.
Stool.
I find that when we travel, I'll even like find things around a hotel room to put under my feet, because
I do the same thing.
It's so much more comfortable and relaxed.
Just in case either Squatty Body or Step and Go listen to the show, I really need a travel version of the stool that folds and
I think they have
in
one.
My suitcase. What?
I think they do have one. Although, I'm so weird about that. Like, what are you going to wash it before and after? Because even just, like, being in there with your feet in
the bathroom
floor.
They're called Clorox wipes. Okay. You can get them in travel packs.
Well, so I want to reiterate that I feel like that is a really underutilized tool. I know that we recommend that people buy things sometimes. This is one of those things that like is not a paid endorsement. The show is not sponsored by anybody. Like Sarah and I each have these in our home and we use them and we love them. And even if you don't have the ability to buy one of these stools, if you have like a little nursing stool or a kid's stool around the house, or you can find like a cardboard box that's, you know, what, 6 inches high, do you think the stools are, Sarah?
I would say 6 inches. Yeah, so I think they have 6-inch versions and 8-inch versions, yeah. Which, depending on your flexibility and the height of your toilet, yeah. You might prefer one or the other. Yeah.
So, I mean, there are different ways to get around this, but creating that alignment with your body can be really helpful, and I just really want to touch on that. The only thing that we haven't talked about that I think would be good, because we talked about this once before, and you can either reference back to it or we can kind of touch on it a little bit, is enemas.
Yes.
So I know that there is both this philosophy in different health communities that cleansing the colon is good, and even coffee enemas are good for health. And I really like Sarah's philosophy of the little bacteria in your gut being your pets and needing to take care of them. And so I try to apply that in a lot of different ways in my life. And when I think about like flooding them, I think that's not very nice. My friends wouldn't like that. Do you maybe want to give a little more context and science on that perspective?
So, I mean, I think there's different types of enemas. And I generally think that, so there's laxative enemas, there's saltwater enemas, there's some other, I don't know all the different kinds, but I know like medical types, you would have basically like a saltwater enema or a laxative enema. So it's got some kind of laxative solution in it as well. And then there's like all of the, we'll say alternative medicine, but really alternative, like coffee enemas. And that's sort of like a different situation. So, you know, in the medical community, they're used to deal with severe constipation. And I have experienced such an enema, and it was not my favorite thing. But when I had it, this is just... You're making me share things, and I'm okay. So
it is totally warranted after you are like talking for weeks about how you're gonna like have this poop show. I'm like, all right, now so, I'm giving it, okay. Turning it right back on you.
In graduate school, I was diagnosed with irritable bowel syndrome with constipation, and I had always sort of battled with constipation. I had never been regular, like pretty much since I was a kid, and it was. You know, I had like favorite foods to eat, like corn on the cob and cherries, because I knew they would help me go. But in graduate school, it got really, really severe. And at one point I went 2 weeks without having a bowel movement and didn't say anything to a doctor, but I started having severe, sharp abdominal pains when I ate anything. So my roommate, who was a nurse, when I told her, yelled at me and sent me to the emergency room. And so I went to the emergency room and they x-rayed me and they palpated my very, very, very tender abdomen. And they had the doctors on call do it and the residents do it and the nurses do it. And then they had a shift change. And so then they had the new doctor on call do it. And I got grumpy. Just saying I got grumpy. But then the x-ray came back and it showed that I was extremely constipated. So then the doctor on call and the nurse and the resident all came to tell me I was full of SHIT. And they all thought it was a super funny joke. And I had been in the ER for like 8 hours. And I just wanted to go home. And I wanted people to stop sticking their fingers up my butt and stop touching my very sore abdomen. So they gave me a Fleet enema. And I lost 5 pounds.
So
the take home message from that is I believe that enemas have a place as an intervention for severe constipation. And I think that something like an enema or glycerin suppository, it in such certain situations can be less invasive than an oral laxative, because you're targeting, depending on the situation, you are being more targeted with your approach, compared to starting everything going from the top down. Sometimes you need to do both, depending on what's going on. So I think that as a medical intervention, it definitely has a role. As a, I'm going to get the home fleet enema kit and apply it at home just because I don't feel like anything's working. Like, not unless, and I mean, unless your doctor says to, I feel like that's a medical intervention that needs to be administered by a medical professional. I mean, that's why they're in the big bucks, right? So, was like totally a story that I never thought I would share. Okay. So, that's kind of like that side of enemas and sort of how I feel about, you know, they're an intervention, and I feel like when properly done, the chances of damage are extremely low. So, but there is, right, a technique to administering them. Coffee enemas, I think I've talked about it on the podcast before.
Yeah, I know we did some online stuff, but I thought it was on the podcast too.
So I think we talked about it on the podcast, and I have written a blog post sharing all of the science behind coffee enemas. And basically, the science shows that they are dangerous. They're dangerous even when performed correctly, although they're extra dangerous when not performed correctly, and that they can cause serious complications. And, you know, there's no other type of alternative medicine enema. I mean, there are a bunch of other herbal concoctions that people will use for enemas, because of coffee enemas use in the Gerson Institute. They've actually been studied in scientific studies, whereas the collection of other alternatives have not. So it's the one that actually they've done scientific studies to show that A, it doesn't actually do any of the things that it claims to do, and B, it has a you know, very high rate of bad things potentially happening. But all of the other enemas, there's no science to support any of them. And so if for somebody who feels like they can only go if they give themselves a daily enema, like I would really look for a good healthcare professional to talk to and critically evaluate what else is going on in your life, because that is not a normal or healthful situation.
So overall, your recommendation would be to,
under medical supervision, as an intervention for things really not going right.
That's what I would have anticipated. So,
but you got to hear my great story.
And you know what? I don't even know. People, like, when these things happen, it's completely organic and unscripted over here.
It's that every single medical professional in that entire wing of the hospital thought they were, like, God's gift to comedy that night by telling me the same joke over and over and over again. And they all thought it was so funny.
Tell us how you really felt about this experience, Sarah. It's not clear to me whether or not you were in favor or not.
I just really wanted for someone to help me poop and to leave. That's all I wanted. I just wanted to poop and go. That's all.
So other than all the other take-home messages that we have right here, I just want to also reiterate that if you are like 80% paleo, this would be a really good opportunity to do kind of one of those clean, committed, you know, 30-day kind of thing, because Sarah's told her story before where she went gluten-free for a while, didn't see any difference. She went dairy-free for a little while, didn't see any difference, thought that it wasn't those things, then went gluten-free, dairy-free when she went paleo, and
Angel sang. It was amazing. I pooped without help. It was awesome. For the first time in 12 years.
So it's kind
it was
of
amazing.
Big, kind of a big deal.
It's kind of it was a huge deal.
You know, if you're
it's
eating...
It's kind of why I started a blog, right there.
Yeah.
Right there.
So if you're kind of eating like a couple bites of gluten two times a week, or, you know, you're not really scrutinizing whether or not butter and cream are being used in things you eat out at restaurants once or twice a week, well, it sounds completely neurotic and insane to be you know, super on top of that, especially when you're at the beginning of your paleo journey, it can really make the difference in your health. So it might just mean committing to eating at home for 30 days or, you know, really just being careful about what you order if you do eat out. But I would just highly suggest that if you do have anything other than that ideal poop scale that we talked about at the beginning of the show, that you do some N equals one experiments with, you know, food and lifestyle factors to see what you can do to get it to be that ideal, because those little things can go and make a big difference, as Sarah can testify.
Yes, I can.
Awesome.
So you survived.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Could do a post selfie now. Like, phew, it's done. It's over.
I just can't. You just can't even. That's...
All right. We will find a topic that will make you much happier next week.
I've had some questions about breastfeeding lately. It must be, like, baby season.
Yeah. I was kind of thinking it was time for a breastfeeding show.
Cool. I can do that.
Excellent.
And maybe we can have, like, someone who's actually still breastfeeding on the show. I mean, I can do the show, but we'll see. We know a couple of paleo people who are awesome, who are actively breastfeeding right now. So we can maybe reach out and have some fresh blood on the show.
That sounds like fun.
It's been a while for you and I. 5 years, to be exact. Well, no, it hasn't been 5 years since I breastfed.
No, it's been...
Since we had babies.
Oh, yeah. It's been long. It's been forever.
Yeah.
It's been an eternity.
Not quite. Awesome. Well, have
right,
a wonderful week, everyone. I hope that your pooping goes really great. And I want to remind you to not take pictures of your stool, and especially do not tag Sarah and I in pictures of your stool. This is really key to your success on the internet. Sarah and I have never done that. We encourage you to never do that.
I have never taken a picture of it. No.
I'm going to start taking pictures of my poop and sending it to you. Is this what number on the scale is this, would you say?
I might have to break up with you if I'm just saying, I think that's crossing a line.
You started it. You told me to get comfortable with poop.
But that's not getting comfortable with poop. That's sending me your poop pictures. That's a completely different thing.
This is true friendship, everyone. I hope you have someone in your life that you can make poop jokes with.
Yeah. And do poop podcasts with. It's awesome. All right. Well, thanks everyone for listening, and we'll see you next week.
Thank you for listening to The Paleo View. If you enjoyed the show, please take a moment to rate us on iTunes. You can also support us by shopping for our favorite paleo products on the sidebars of our individual websites or by donating through PayPal.
12 and 48 hours.
Oh, snap. Look at me. I knew something.